Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, this episode starts our seventh year of hosting and producing Eyes on Success, and we'll start out by taking a trip to the Guide Dog Foundation. What's involved in obtaining and working with a guide dog? Is a guide dog right for you?
We'll speak with Carolyn Giambalvo, a consumer services associate at the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs, her guide dog, Alice, and Andrew Rubenstein, the director of marketing. But first for our tip of the week. This week's tip is that the decision between using a cane or a guide dog is a very big decision, and it's a different answer for every person for various reasons. In fact, the answer can change over time for a given individual. So it's important to get as much information as you can ahead of time, and that'll help you make the best decision for you.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible by
Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2017 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC. Let's start by meeting Andrew and Carolyn and learning about their roles at the Guide Dog Foundation.
My name is Andrew Rubenstein. I'm the director of marketing for the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs.
And you're cited.
I am cited, yes.
So how did you get involved working with the Guide Dog Foundation and the vet service dogs?
I was originally working for a pretty big for-profit organization on Long Island, and was interested in getting out of the corporate side of the world and getting into something a little more interesting and rewarding. I actually found this job posting on a very random website. I stumbled across it somehow. But when I got here, I had no idea this place was back here. And it's like a little magical nook in Smithtown. It's pretty crazy. I get to go home and I actually can say, you know, we help change people's lives.
My name is Carolyn Giambalvo, and I am an employee of the Guide Dog Foundation. I've worked here for 8 years, and I have had several guide dogs.
Is that how you first got involved with the Guide Dog Foundation?
Yes. I didn't work here when I got my first dog. I was a stay-at-home mom, and I got my first dog, and I was scared to death. And within 2 days, I felt so comfortable here. And it was just a wonderful experience. I started volunteering here. And after my second dog, I received my second dog, I started working here. And I've worked here for 8 years, and I love it.
And we're actually at the Guide Dog Foundation with Carolyn, and you've got your dog here, your current dog. Would you like to introduce her?
My current dog's name is Alice, and she is a yellow lab. I've only had her since April. So we are a product of our new training, our new 2-week program. It's a shorter program than some of the other schools. And we're still finding out about each other. They say the 6 months to a year, you get to be a bonded, great team.
And of course, you're not hearing Alice because one of the things they teach the dogs to do is not bark.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is what's involved in getting and working with a guide dog. And next week, we'll continue the conversation and talk primarily about how the dogs and their handlers are trained.
In a bit, we'll talk about the details of the training and how that all happens, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about the Guide Dog Foundation itself, how long it's been around, and what else goes on here besides just the training.
The Guide Dog Foundation has been around since 1946. We started in Forest Hills, providing guide and service dogs to veterans coming home from World War II. Our services were free of charge then, and they're still free of charge now. We provide all of our services at no charge to anybody that wants a guide or a service dog from us, and we get all our donations through private donations. We don't have any government funding streams. We have a 2-week class. We originally had a 4-week class, but it was a huge obligation and time commitment to ask from people. And so the 2-week class really kind of combined everything up and made it a really streamlined program. We have 10 acres here in our Smithtown campus. We have 3 main buildings, our main administrative building, which also houses our 17-room residence hall. We have a kennel and training center across the street that houses anywhere between 60 and 80 dogs at a time. And then we also have our breeding and development center that houses a lot of our boarding, our puppies, our puppy nursery. We have about maybe 50 to 60 full-time employees, and then we have about 1,300 volunteers, not all here in Smithtown, but around the country. We have probably 200 or 300 here in Smithtown that help us on campus. And we also have about 200 volunteer puppy raisers on Long Island, and the rest spread down the East Coast for volunteers, whether they're puppy raisers or event support or taxi team or anything like that.
And in a couple of months, we'll come back and actually do a tour of the Guide Dog Foundation facility with Andrew.
And about how many people come through the program here each year?
On the guide dog side, we serve about 65 folks a year. And we have an equal number on the service dog side. And we typically have about anywhere from 5 to 10 people on each class. And there's a 2-to-1 student to trainer ratio. So everybody gets very specific instruction. They get one-on-one time with their trainers. On the service dog side, we have about 5 or 6 classes a year. And there's usually 10 to 12 people in each of those classes. It's a little more intense. We have about 6 instructors on class for those classes to manage that amount of people. And on the guide dog side, we have probably around 10 classes a year.
Carolyn, you said that your first experience with the Guide Dog Foundation was as a student getting trained with your first guide dog. What was that like?
I was a dental hygienist when I started losing my vision. I had no idea. It wasn't something that I expected. And I was trying all these things to see if I could help my eyesight or help me manage my everyday living, what I needed to do. So my thoughts when I first came here was, is this going to work? Is this going to make me more independent? Because that's what everybody wants. They want to be more independent. They want to be able to do their own thing just like everybody else. For me, when I got my first guide dog, I wanted to be able to do for my children and my family what all the other mothers and wives were doing, you know, being a member of the family and being able to be productive and do things for my family that make me feel good and that they, you know, appreciated. So people come here, they're like, is it going to work? I don't know. Like I said, when I first introduced myself, I was scared to death. I had never even been away to college. And I was leaving my husband and my 2 children for the first time. And I lived here on Long Island. People come from all over the country and Canada to us. So this place made me so comfortable within 2 days, and the camaraderie that we had on our class with the other students, the camaraderie that we had with our instructors, it was really an amazing experience for me.
And what was the impact of getting a guide dog?
It really changed my life, and it changed my family's life as well, because they didn't worry about me so much anymore. I was able to go to the grocery store, and at that time, I could walk to the grocery store. There was a grocery store near me. I could walk to the bakery and get something. I could walk to bring my son's guitar to the music store where he was meeting me after school for his music lesson. And I remember distinctly with my first guide dog walking from my house to the music store with my son's guitar strapped on my back. He was in middle school, and he would meet me. I'd hand off the guitar, and he would be able to have his lesson. And that was a wonderful thing. My husband was at work, so that was a wonderful thing for me to be able to do.
So I was wondering, you obviously lost your vision later in life.
Yes.
Had you considered using a cane? I'm wondering what the trade-offs were in your mind in terms of using a cane versus a dog. A lot of people struggle with that kind of trade-off.
I have always been a dog person. I've had dogs all my life. Now that I've experienced having a guide dog, I feel that it is a more graceful way of traveling, somewhat faster way of traveling. It's also another set of eyes so that, say, you're crossing the street and you have to tell your dog that it's safe to cross the street through your orientation and mobility skills. But if it is not safe, say one of those pesky hybrid cars that are so very quiet are coming down the street, your dog will disobey you. And we call that intelligent disobedience. So that is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And actually, my orientation and mobility instructor, who was a dog person as well, when she was giving me my O&M skills, she actually said to me that I think you would be a good candidate to have a guide dog because I'm a very, very active person. I've never been a stay-at-home kind of person. I'm always out and about. So it really helps me greatly to fulfill my lifestyle that I want to live.
What do you think some of the other benefits of having a guide dog would be?
A guide dog can find things for you. One of the great commands that we have is the find command. We can train them to find certain things. Like she was trained to find my office. She's trained to find the restroom.
Well, that's interesting. You talk about dogs being able to find things for you. That's certainly something a cane can't do for you.
Exactly. They can find the door inside to a store. As I said, she has been trained to find the door to DSW, the door to Panera, the door to Dressbox, all these things. And she's also trained to find when the bus, I take paratransit to and from work. When the bus comes, she's find the bus. She finds the seat on the bus for me. She finds a seat in a restaurant if I'm by myself. You know, different things.
So yeah, that's nice.
She's been trained to find the door to the bank for me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the line at the bank.
Do people who use dogs use canes at all, or is it an either-or proposition, or is there some combination?
There are some instances where you might want to use your cane instead of having your guide dog. We tell people that it is not the best situation to go to a zoo with your guide dog, or a hot beach, 90-degree weather, where you'll be going to the beach for a number of hours and then your dog will be sitting in the hot sun as well. And then also things like fireworks displays. We don't recommend that you bring your dog to fireworks displays because that could possibly make your dog afraid of thunder. So, it's startling to them. So there are some things. So you use your cane, but it is always, always a good idea to keep your cane skills up. Your orientation and mobility is very important for you when you have a guide dog as well as when you have a cane.
Well, the other thing you mentioned I thought was interesting before when I asked you about the differences between, you know, using a cane versus a dog, and you said something about it being very graceful to move around with a dog. I mean, I always feel, I'm a cane user, and I'm pretty comfortable using a cane, but I always feel like, you know, I have to hit things to know where they are, either people or doors, and it makes a clunk and a big rattle and a noise. And
I can verify that. I'm often the thing that he walks into.
Well, a guide dog is taught to go from point A to point B in a straight line. So with a cane, if there was, say, a garbage can sitting in the middle of the sidewalk, your cane would hit that, but your dog would just simply go around it if, as long as it was safe to go around. And so you'll feel your dog veer and go around something, but you might not know what it is.
Are there any particular requirements in order to be eligible to get a guide dog through the Guide Dog Foundation?
Two requirements are to apply to our Guide Dog Foundation is that they are legally blind and that they've had orientation and mobility skills. So if they haven't gotten those orientation and mobility skills, we urge them to get because they cannot apply to our school unless they have them. And sometimes we have to tell people that they need to get more orientation and mobility skills in order to be accepted to our program because you do need to have very good skills to have a guide dog.
Do you actually test applicant students to assess how good their orientation and mobility skills are before you bring them here for the residency?
For people that are interested in getting a guide dog, they don't necessarily have to have official orientation and mobility training. We just need them to be confident to independently travel. We have to have some level of confidence in them to be able to navigate their house in their local area. I spoke with actually Brad Hibbard, who's our director of training, about this, and he said as long as they can travel independently, we would welcome them to submit an application. I think it's about just a certain level of independence.
And there are instances where a lot of times people say they haven't had O&M instruction for a number of years, and they have trouble getting the form signed off by an O&M instructor. They can submit a video, and we will review it in order to see what their skills are. But may I say this, legal blindness, as you know, is not total blindness. So we do have many instances where somebody is partially sighted or just legal blindness. And that was the way I was when I first got my first guide dog, because my situation is a deteriorating situation. I have retinitis pigmentosa. So my needs have changed over the years. So now when I got Alice, they matched me to my present needs, mm-hmm. and it's worked out very well.
Alice is your third guide dog, so you've had to retire two others before her. How do you know when it's time for a dog to retire?
Sometimes they tell you, and sometimes you have to decide based on what your needs are. But we actually give a sheet to our graduates when they complete our program about retiring their dog and signs to look for. And they can always call us and ask us, you know, my dog's doing this. I don't know why. And we'll say, well, how old is your dog? And we'll talk to them. We support our graduates even after they complete our program. We have a lifetime of aftercare, which means if they are having a situation that they don't know what to do with, or their dog is in a new situation that they didn't know if they did it correctly, or even like medical issues, they call us up and we will support them. And either an instructor, if it's behavioral or training, an instructor will call them up, and if need be, go out and see them. And if it's medical, we have our vet techs and our veterinarians that can confer with their veterinarian. So we give a lifetime of support to our graduates as well. We just don't let them run off into the sunset and say, see you in 8 years when your dog retires.
So you've had dogs for many years, as you've just said. What's the relationship like with the dog?
The bond that's created between a guide dog handler and their dog is so special. You're with them 24/7 usually, more than you're with your husband and your kids. And you create this bond that they look out for you and they listen to you because they want to please you the best. They want to please you so much. It's an unbelievable relationship, I have to say.
So if someone wanted a dog today, how long of a wait is there in general?
On the guide dog side, it's anywhere between 3 and 6 months, depending if somebody wants a special type of dog, or if they're looking for a certain size dog or a certain breed of dog, it could take a little longer. But typically, it's 3 to 6 months. On the service dog side, it does take a little longer because you're custom training each dog to meet each individual's needs. So if you have a veteran who is missing a leg, you want to train the dog to perform certain tasks to help mitigate that disability. Each dog is trained to do about 100 different tasks on the service dog side, and then from there, each dog is then custom trained to do any additional tasks that they may need, depending on their disability. So it does take a little longer.
So can you walk us through the training experience? Once a person gets here, it's a residential program for this 2 weeks. What all happens during that 2 weeks? What should people expect?
When they arrive, they are, well, let me back up a little bit and just say, when they get on the plane, if they are flying, we ask for sighted assistance onto the plane and then sighted assistance off the plane to our baggage claim, and then one of our instructors will be picking them up at the airport and driving them to our school.
So the Guide Dog Foundation actually makes the arrangements for the sighted assistance?
Yes, and travel to and from the foundation is free. Everything is free in our program, both of our programs. You are responsible for the vet bills and the dog food after you complete our program. But everything is free. Your stay here is free. The meals are free. The dog is free. The equipment is free. The application is free. There are no application fees. Everything is free.
Okay, so once they get here, what happens?
Well, they get here, they get shown to their room, and they have their own bedroom, their own bathroom. They get oriented to our building, and our instructors will show them around. At this point, they will be using their canes. And then they get lectures on what's expected, what's going to happen. Currently, our classes start on Monday, and on Tuesday afternoons after lunch, they get their dog. And we call that dog day, and it's an amazing day. It's like when you are going to have a baby, because you are, you're meeting your companion that you're going to have, like, for a number of years. And they are asked to go to their room, turn the lights on, sit on their bed, and then the instructors will bring them their dog. And Andrew or Bill or Becker will usually be following with video or camera and take a picture of the first meeting. And then the instruction starts with their dog, and we start off very slowly, just walking around the building, walking outside the building. They are shown to the break area where they will be assigned their own space for the dog to go to the bathroom. So they will do the very basics there, and then the next day, we go out training, and we build on that.
And where does the actual training take place?
Currently, we do a lot of training in a town called Huntington, where we make a route with our instructors. They show us this route, and we practice it every day. And then we eventually do it by ourselves, but the instructors are all around watching us. It's not like they leave you and say, we'll see you at the end. No, they're all around us.
They never lost a student yet, huh?
No,
that's
no.
Good
so
to
they,
know.
They're all around us. And then we also do training in the city. We do subway training.
When you say the city, you mean New York City.
New York City. We currently are going into Manhattan.
That's a busy place.
We have a great relationship with the Lighthouse Guild, and they let us camp out there, kind of. And then we do crowd training and subway training there. And if they are somebody that needs that kind of training, they go in for 2 days. If not, they go in 1 day. And then we will customize and do things for that particular student that they need. We will customize the training to their needs.
So you expose them to a little bit of everything.
Yes.
But if they have some special needs, they'll work a little bit more on those.
We had one, probably a number of students that did a lot of fishing, or had like kind of a job on a fishing boat, or liked to fish. So one of the things when we were matching the dogs to our applicants was that when they knew they were going to match a particular dog to this student, they actually made sure that the dog was able to enjoy being on a boat. So that was part of the training. And then there was another time when we knew that there was a student that was going to be getting a particular dog, and she worked in a daycare center. And so I was doing a speaking engagement at a school, and the instructor came with me, and it was the last day of school before the summer, and the instructor brought the dog there. And I'm sure you can imagine what the last day of school was when the bell rang, and the dog did phenomenally well. It was like really amazing.
We did a separate episode where we interviewed a woman who raises the guide dog puppies for the first 6 months after they're weaned from their moms. Before the first day of class, these dogs have already had maybe 2 years of training, and the dogs have been exposed to all of these different environments before they meet their final person, correct?
Yes. For us, it's more like 12 to 14 months our puppy raisers have our dogs, and then they are brought into all different kinds of experiences, classes, planes, trains, automobiles, schools, restaurants, and our puppy raisers do that. And then if they pass all those tests, then they start to get trained to be a guide dog. And that typically takes 3 to 4 months at this point.
Typically, our puppy raisers, as Carolyn mentioned, their main responsibility is socializing the dog. And one of the great things about puppy raisers is at the graduation, we have something called Celebration Saturday. Puppy raisers are invited to come back and meet the handlers that their dogs are being placed with, which is a really an amazing thing to see. Just the emotions back and forth between the handler and the puppy raiser. It's just the puppy raiser can see all this work that I did is going towards this person. And like I said, it's a really magical thing to be a part of.
We try and get them ready for any kind of situation. However, you know how life changes and people's lives change. So if their life changes and they need to speak to somebody regarding that and how to handle, I moved to a new apartment, how do I best have my dog adjust to a new apartment and things like that. So that would be a time when they would call us up, and we have actually field reps that cover every state and Canada. So their field rep would actually call them and discuss it with them, and if need be, go out and see them.
Now for this week's final item, how to get more information about the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs and guide dogs in general.
If people would like more information about the Guide Dog Foundation or how to obtain a dog, what would you tell them?
If anybody is interested in getting a guide dog or wants to know more about getting a guide dog, our website is guidedog.org. And we also have an application online there.
What's the phone number for somebody who would prefer that?
If somebody wants to contact us over the phone, you can contact us at 631-930-9000.
Do you have a social media presence?
We have a presence on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We have videos on YouTube. We do our best to communicate with our constituents on every platform that's really available. We dabble in some other platforms. You'll find us on LinkedIn and Google+ for that type of thing.
And as usual, you'll find links to all of that information, the social media contacts and their website, in the show notes associated with this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1701. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about guide dogs, the training. Did you ever wonder what's involved in training a guide dog or what the experience is like for the recipient of a guide dog? We'll walk through the process with Maria Nuzzi, a guide dog mobility instructor at the Guide Dog Foundation and America's Vet Dogs, and Andrew Rubenstein, director of marketing for the foundation. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.